It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. We are living that dream and taking you with us. Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Ball. Aaron Wells is here. And Austin Danforth is kind of here. As many of you know, we had a part of the state, and even we up here got a little bit of snow. We got 3-4 inches. But there are parts of the state of Vermont that got dumped on. Like, my parents in Rutland got 2 feet of snow. And Austin, who is living now in southern Vermont, is kind of snowed in. So for the first time in Aaron Wells' life, he had to really be a producer today. And we have figured out a way to do this show live together as Austin sits comfortably in a very warm front room, probably with a Christmas tree, lighting the air, having a couple of gingerbread cookies and a cup of coffee. He's probably wearing his bathrobe and a pair of slippers. Austin Danforth is here, so the whole family joined you this morning. Good morning, Austin. How's it going down there?
Dude, I'm in my coziest sweatshirt.
I'm sure.
I got a big, tall tumbler of coffee, a nice Yeti tumbler. Just finished my gingerbread cookie. The tree's in the other room. There's still about 2+ feet of snow on the eaves outside. We got positively dumped on, and to think down here in White River Junction, to think that, you know, 15 minutes down the road, there are a couple places that got like upwards of 40 inches of snow. It was coming down like 4 or 5 inches an hour. Like, I mean, it was, my back is still feeling the after effects of shoveling 2 feet of snow.
Are we supposed to feel bad for him yet? Are we feeling bad for him yet, Aaron? Are we supposed to feel bad for him sitting in his bathrobe in a big comfy sweatshirt, sipping his coffee from his home, probably hasn't showered yet? Just rolled out of bed.
Of course not.
And here we are having, we struggle. It's 5 degrees up here in the greater Burlington area. Getting out of bed this morning, having to get the car taken care of, having to get ourselves into this unbelievable studio we have here where 1 minute it's a 250 degrees and the next minute it's 30 degrees. But there's Austin down there, the high-priced talent, able to relax.
Don't forget the phone line box shutting off.
Exactly. We have all kinds of problems going on in here. I'm just kidding, buddy.
You can hear me loud and clear, so I think I'm the least of your problems.
Yeah,
right now.
Exactly.
No, this worked out beautifully.
Yeah, actually, and the sound is perfect. So Austin is here, so all three of us are here, and we've got quite a show today. If you want to join our conversation, please do. The phone number is 802-655-6672, if you can get through. I mean, you know, I was on the huddle this week, and the phone didn't work a whole lot. So anyway, 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. What a show we have. Second hour is going to be full of guests. We've got Eric Bolin of New York Newsday. He is a Yankee beat writer. A lot of talk right now with the Yankees. And I'll tell you, right now in baseball in New York, with the new ownership stuff happening with the Mets are big talk. They're going to spend some money. The Yankees right now are in kind of limbo. I think, and we'll talk about this with Eric Bolin, and we don't have to get into it right now, but right now where the Yankees are with DJ LeMahieu and Brian Cashman's, you know, he's really rolling the dice. He's asking DJ LeMahieu to go out and see what the market is and then please to come back to him and see if they can match that offer or beat it, which I think is what Brian Cashman's hoping he will do. But losing DJ LeMahieu could be a big problem. There is an article this morning in the New York Post that says if LeMahieu goes, there's a bright spot because potentially they could bring D.D. Gregorius back and re-sign Tanaka. I don't think that sounds like that's good news to me as a Yankee fan, but we'll talk to Eric Bolin about that. And then during the second hour as well at 11:20, we're going to talk to our Patriots insider, Tom King. A lot of talk about the Patriots and some things happened on Thursday with the Raiders losing. That, look, it's a long shot for the Patriots to get to the playoffs, but it's a big game this weekend with Miami. We're going to get our Patriots fix with Tom King. But before we get into that, I had some week, Austin. I mean, I had an opportunity this week. So Monday through Friday, I had the opportunity to work with Arnie Spanier on the huddle. And so I did that all week. And what a week it was doing that. Man, I'm going to tell you. He is
like,
Go ahead.
How comfy you must be, like, I mean, that studio's second home now. I mean,
it is.
You're home away from home.
I truly feel like I've been here since. Yeah, I've been here more than I've been in my house, to be honest with you. It's been unbelievable. What a show. We had so many crazy shows on here, but I'll tell you what a pro he is and how lucky the community is to have him hosting these shows during the week. I mean, how he prepares and the information that he has all the time. It was actually very interesting all week. He'd send me 10 stories a day. I mean, he just has so much information coming at him all the time. Very, very impressive week. But before we get into that stuff and go into that after, I do want to get into you because you had a pretty big story this week as you previewed the UVM men's hockey team. And it all starts, and if I'm correct here, it all starts today. Right? Am I saying
yeah,
this correct?
Yep,
they open up today, finally, UVM, and it's exciting, obviously, for fans around here and for everybody that UVM Sports is restarting here. We got the basketball program starting on Monday, women's basketball's this weekend as well. I think women's hockey's as well. But let's preview this UVM men's hockey team. Todd Woodcroft coming in from the NHL takes over a program that for the last few years has not played at the level I think the fans want them to play at. Todd Woodcroft brings in a pedigree, an NHL pedigree. Exciting times for UVM hockey. What did you learn this week about the team?
Yeah, Alex Abrami and I have been rolling out previews for all of the UVM winter sports coming out. And so, yeah, we like with the hockey task, journalistically an unenviable task for me, if only because I have to follow the footsteps of the venerable one, Ted Ryan.
Right.
But someone has to draw
that's a story in itself.
I know it is. So this is the first non Ted Ryan byline for a UVM preview in years. But yeah, it's like you look at the Catamounts and you think this, like the task of getting them back to where they had been would have been enough, for a couple normal years for anybody, but Todd Woodcroft comes in the year 2020 being what it is. He's coaching remotely for 4 months before he arrives in Burlington in August. And then, through the fall, they had a stoppage here in the last month. But prior to that, it's a phased training process where they could only have X number of players at a time training together. And so it wasn't, until, well into the semester that they were able to get everybody on the ice at the same time. And I think he even said, are we coaching a football team now? There's so many guys. What's going on? He's got 10 new guys coming in. He really was impressed with the guys that have already been there, the veterans that, when you look at their track record the last few years, last year was a 5-win year. It was the worst year for the program in pushing two decades. You look at the last decade, they three straight losing seasons. In that last decade, they won basically less than a third of their Hockey East games, which just isn't good enough. There's a lot to do. I mean, they're replacing one of the best goaltenders in program history in Stefanos Lekas. He's top five in every category for the career that the program keeps. And coming behind him, there's two seniors, Matt Beck and Tyler Harmon, who they've been competing alongside Lekas every day, but between them, they've only appeared in 6 games in the last 3 years. So there's that. They brought in a promising freshman, Gabe Carrier. He's from Quebec. I'm not quite sure on the pronunciation yet, but he could be in the mix sooner than later. So that's one thing. You're trying to compete in a league full of NHL draft picks that, your team, like the UVM team, has one draft pick on the roster. So as he put it, we're not the Red Army here.
Yeah.
He's characterizing it as a team that can't win playing fancy. So they can, it's really about playing hard and winning that way. He called it a real workmanlike attitude. Said, I believe the phrase he turned was, his team has construction boots for skates, and he's proud of that. So I think hockey is one of those sports where you can make up for a lot with, just superlative effort. And I think if he gets that, there's no reason to think they can't, improvement off of last year isn't possible. But you know, like that starts tonight. They're down at UMass for a two-game series. Both games are going to be on NESN, so folks can watch on the big screen at home.
Exciting.
Yeah, and like it's there, I think on the whole, you know, you get this, you know, the change of regime. The excitement is the word. I mean, whether or not that turns it is, I don't think anybody's going and expecting, you know, to finish in, you know, the top four in Hockey East or whatever. But like, there's just that freshness is the exciting thing.
So let me just ask. I mean, I obviously in big time in college sports, and I think you have to put UV. I mean, we talk about the UVM men's basketball team here a lot, but they are a mid-major program in a very low mid-major conference that is doing special things. There's no question. But they've taken some steps to prove that they're a legit program in the country. The UVM men's hockey program and women's hockey program, for that matter, are in the SEC. For football fans, would look at the SEC of college hockey. I mean, they're playing against the best teams in the country. What does Todd Woodcroft's presence mean to the program? I look at it as a passive fan and say, there's NHL there. I mean, that's an NHL coach coming to coach the team. And then I'm going through the coaching staff this morning as we're prepping for the show, and Mike Babcock is a volunteer advisor to the coaching staff. That's one of the biggest names in hockey around the world is Mike Babcock. So the most important thing he's got to be able to do, he's got to be able to recruit. I mean, I would think obviously you've got to coach the X's and O's, but you've got to sell kids to want to come play at UVM, you know, he's competing with the other top teams in the country, and they're in his conference. So I guess my question is, does Todd Woodcroft, and Kevin Snedd, and I know at the end of it wasn't very good in terms of the wins and losses, but I've always really respected him as a coach. Does Todd Woodcroft all of a sudden, and now having names like Mike Babcock there, is that enticing to bring more kids and more talent? So instead of those kids going to, you know, BC or BU or pick your top 3, 4, 5 teams in the Hockey East, is that going to drive kids to want to come play at UVM?
I got to say, I think that's the thought process behind hiring him in the first place. I think you look at what he's done as a behind the scenes development guy, as an assistant at the NHL level for a long time, in working in international hockey for a long time with you know, youth international teams. Right now, he's also advising the Swedish junior national team from a distance in their competition currently. I think you look at what he can do on the ice, and I think they saw a coach that, you know, can, you know, X's and O's wise, and, you know, I think they saw somebody with that potential to take the reins and do something like that. And I think when you add up all those things you just rattled off, those tangibles, intangibles, whatever you want to call them, he's a guy that, you know, knows NHL hockey. And if you want to get guys and send guys to the NHL, having a guy that, you know, like when I talked to him the other day, he's rattling off a NHL comparison or two for all these guys on his team that, like, and when it's second nature. And so, you know, like when you can bring a kid in and say, you know, I've coached this guy or I've seen this guy and this is how he does it, and I see some of him in you, that, like, he was talking about, you know, it's not necessarily wins and losses. It's about building habits. And one of those habits is, you know, doing those things that guys that are in professional hockey do, you know, how they carry themselves, how they conduct themselves,
right,
you know, in trying to improve. I think that's really important. And then, yeah, when you can, when Todd Woodcroft has that sort of recognition, that sort of, that name pedigree on his own, and he brings in another volunteer assistant, Mark Stewart, who's a former NHL defenseman, who's a first round draft pick.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you bring in a guy, Mike Babcock, who is, you know, 8th all time in NHL wins as a coach, who's led Canada to a pair of gold medals, who, you know, like, as Woodcroft explained to Alex Abrami in the spring, you know, he's like arguably the Bill Belichick of professional hockey. That's like bringing in a Belichick to help, you know, advise your football team. It's like bringing in a Phil Jackson to help advise your basketball team. Like, I don't think there's any downside to that. And it's a volunteer position. So it's like the fact that Todd Woodcroft's coaching, his network was able to bring in these folks for no cost to UVM is already a boon. And I mean, you can imagine they're only going to be picking up more guys down the road. They picked up a couple this year late that, you know, he's already selling the fact that you get in now, you're on the ground floor. We're turning this thing around. A couple of the late additions, he's already talking up as, you know, like the super young kids who could be poised to be NHL draft picks just next year. One of them, this kid, Dovar Tinling from the Montreal suburbs. He's 17. I think he's like the youngest freshman in college hockey. He's playing against guys that are 4 or 5 years older or more, if you want to talk about the seniors. So there is a lot of positive energy, and there's a lot of reasons to think that this will turn around. Although I use that word in talking to him, and he hated it because he's like, are we talking 3 degrees or 180 degrees? That's not what it's about. It's about continuing tradition and you know, building good habits.
Well, I mean, to me, that's a power play of coaches right there. I mean, that there's a hockey term for it. Yeah. Did you like that? My buddy Dookie would love that I just brought the power play line out. He would love that because they all think I don't know anything about hockey. Well, listen, as much as I respected and cared and liked Coach Sneddon and what he did at UVM, obviously this new era and the names that this coaching staff has, you know, look, I've said it, and I'm not even sure where the process is right now in terms of UVM and their and the rebuild of Patrick and Gutterson and whatever. But we all know that UVM is up against it in terms of recruiting with some of the big boys in the country. And these two guys, I mean, Todd Woodcroft is bringing in some big names to coach these kids. And we'll see how what that transitions into better recruiting and more wins. But it's going to be exciting because it all starts tonight as UVM is at UMass, and you can watch it on Nest. And how cool is that? You can watch your cats on TV because it's cold out. You can be like Austin. You could be in your underwear and, you know, and maybe a bathrobe and eating some gingerbread cookies and sipping.
I'm wearing hot cocoa. More than to be clear, I'm wearing more than underwear right now. So we should get that straight.
Sorry, ladies. Sorry about that. All right, we come back. We're gonna do the Green City Garage poll question because, you know, Austin is so long-winded. It's his fault. So Chris Wallace, don't get mad. But we're gonna come back with the Green City Garage poll question. And Arnie and I had a little debate yesterday. I want to clear the air a little bit. We'll talk about that next. Don't go anywhere.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
You know, I know you've had your plate full all day, Aaron, here, okay? So I get it. You know, Austin's down, you know, sitting by the fire with his feet up in his hot chocolate, and you had to come in early to make sure this would work. But could you get some Christmas music or some holiday music on our returns, for goodness sakes? I mean, we are a week away from the big guy coming down the chimney. You know what I mean? How about a little something for the holidays? Instead, you're playing we're playing the normal stuff. Can we at least be some type of hip here, please?
I was frantically scrolling through the bed list for Christmas music, and I'm sure it's somewhere. But between all the other things, I could not find it in time.
We had to make sure Austin was ready, though. Had to make sure that Austin was comfortable and ready to go. Couldn't have a couple, you know, couldn't have a little Nat King Cole in there somewhere to come back. You can't have that.
You sound bitter with Austin today.
No, I love Austin. Hey, guys, the Green City Garage poll question. At Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, number 5 in South Burlington. Phone number 802-651-9299. Let me say that again, 802-651-9299. Listen, I've told you guys many times, if you have a car issue, you know, the car's making a funny noise, tire issue, you know, anything that's wrong with your automobile, you want to call my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage, 802-651-9299 in South Burlington. He'll take care of your car. And not only is he knowledgeable, patient, because anyone that looks at my car, Austin, you know, you got to be patient because there are things about, there are simple things about my car. Like, you know, I've told you many times, like, it took me 6-7 months to figure out how to turn the heat on in one of my cars.
It can be baffling.
It can be. You know, it's confusing. I don't want it to be there. I want it to be at my feet. My feet are cold. How do I get the heat to go down there? You know, how do I get the heat to turn on, period? And Chris is always very patient with me. So check out my buddy Chris Wallace at Green City Garage. Like I said, phone number one more time, 802-651-9299. And they're an environmentally friendly garage, which means that they use only things in there. It's clean. They take care of the environment. He's a good man. He's got a great business. Very proud to be associated with him. So Green City Garage. The poll question today, because Austin got so loud and so long with his UVM hockey prediction, and when we talked about the prep of the season, he got so very, very busy day for Austin, so we were a little late with this. This is fun jabbing on Austin when he's not in the room with me. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, I'm just playing with you. Anyway. WEEI's Gary Tangway this week, Austin, said that Bill Belichick is not the right guy to rebuild these Patriots. Is he right, yes or no? Go to Twitter right now, 101.3 The Game, and tell us if he's right. And I think Gary Tangway, and I'm not sure if you know who he is. He's been around the Boston sports scene for a long time. You'll see him on television, I think, on Fox Sports Boston. Yeah. I've seen him at games at Fenway Park, actually. But he's on WEI a lot.
I know the name. I know the face. Yeah.
I think he's crazy. So my answer is no. Yes, he is the right. He's not right. Bill Belichick is the right guy. Anytime Bill Belichick is coaching your team, whether it is going to be a rebuild or whether you are sustaining championships, in my opinion, Austin, he is the right guy for the job. I cannot imagine. And this, to me, this comment that I saw this week is so Boston to me, isn't it? It is just so Boston to go out on a whim and say this year, with everything that this organization and this team, and let me just make sure I premise this, and most people know, we've been doing this show a long time, I'm no Patriot fan. I'm kind of excited that they're not, that they potentially will not be in the playoffs this year. It drives me crazy they're in it every single year. But I've got so much respect for that organization, Austin, and what Bill Belichick has done there, that to say right now, because this season, with the COVID stuff that they've had to deal with the iconic quarterback going to another team, and the players that decided not to play because of COVID, bringing in a guy and Cam Newton that nobody knew what Cam Newton was going to be. They got him for obviously on the cheap, obviously for the contract, but to have no idea what this team was going to be. And until last week, where they just got manhandled by the Rams on a Thursday night game, which again is a quick turnaround. And it's a game that New England had to go out west twice. They played back-to-back games in Los Angeles.
They stayed.
That doesn't matter. The point is you're in the West Coast 2 weeks in a row.
The sunshine is unsettling compared to Foxborough.
Well,
the
point is being away, having to play two games across the country back to back. I'm not making excuses for them. But the point is, this team and the team is still doesn't have a legitimate chance. But there are some scenarios that could create them in a situation where they could be shooting for a playoff berth the last game of the season if they keep winning.
And
let me just finish. To say that Bill Belichick isn't the right guy for that, I think is crazy.
And they do have excuses in terms of their roster. They had the most COVID opt-outs of any team. They've had COVID issues. They've had injuries. There have been times where it doesn't look like Cam's healthy, and even though he's continued to play, it's not like Bill is working with a full hand here.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know where you say that. Like, Gary Tangway could say that and be like, would do it with a straight face, because when you look at Bill Belichick's entire career, I mean, he was there with Parcells when they built the Giants into a juggernaut.
Yeah.
He nearly got the Browns around the corner. They were not good when he got there, and they made the playoffs or pushed for the playoffs.
He made them
into a team.
Austin, I would argue, too, that some of that work was part of the reason that the Ravens went on to be so good as that organization later on down the road.
Absolutely fair. And then to say when he gets to the Patriots, within 5 years, or was it 5 years or 6 years? You could say within half a decade, they'd won three Super Bowls. And since those three Super Bowls, he's rebuilt them multiple times to win three more Super Bowls. Where is the pedigree and the track record for not being able to build a team? I think this year of all years, the first time without the same quarterback you've had for 20 years. Okay. There might be a little that segue might not be the cleanest, but all intents and purposes, it's been pretty, I think, as good as you could hope, really.
And both of you guys lay out a perfect description of why Bill Belichick is the right guy for a quote-unquote rebuild in New England. But the point being here is that the greatest coach of all time is Bill Belichick, bar none. And there have been many iconic coaches. And I can remember the day that Bill Belichick decided to turn down the Jets job and go to do the Patriots.
What a day.
And I remember thinking, and it's so funny where your mentality goes from that time ago, right? Because I thought that was, why would you want to go to New England? I mean, that's the worst. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when the Patriots were a laughing stock. It was, you could get tickets for like three, I remember you could get tickets for so, you could, they were giving away tickets to Patriot games. And he's the guy. I mean, and for Tangway to say that, and I will say this, and I've said this with you guys many times, if this is a quote-unquote rebuild in New England, and I'm not sure it is, I know that there's big question marks in the situation they have at quarterback for next season. I get all that. But I don't think this is a rebuild. I think this is a quick build. I don't think it is. And if it is a rebuild, if the Patriots are going to go down that road, it's not whether is Bill Belichick the right guy for that job. It's will Bill Belichick want that job? Because there comes a point in your life, and Bill Belichick is that guy to me. Now, Arnie was talking to me this week, and he seemed to think that Bill Belichick wants to stick around because he wants to have the most wins in the history.
I'd buy that.
But I don't buy that. That's not who I think Bill Belichick is. To me, Bill Belichick is about winning championships. And if he's not going to be able to put a team on the field that can do that, I can't see him sticking around for that. That's just what my, and I know, I don't know Bill Belichick. I don't know what's in his head. I don't think anybody knows what's going on in Bill Belichick's head, to be honest with you. But I just don't think that would happen. I don't think he would stick around if that's going to be the way it was going to be for him. And I for Tangway to come out and say that, I just think it's crazy. So let us know right now at Twitter on the Town Fair, at Twitter at 101.3 The Game, our Green City Garage poll question. Is Tangway right? Is Bill Belichick not the right fit to rebuild the Patriots? Go there now. All right, I want to get into this before we go to break, and we have a few minutes here. But yesterday, Arnie's a big NBA guy, and we talk a lot of NBA with Arnie. And I was talking to him about, we went down this road yesterday, and let me try to replay what was going on. We were talking about who we expect to be successful, and then somehow we got talking about the NBA in terms of what it was to what it is today. And I used to be, and we've talked about this, Austin, when the Last Dance came out with the Bulls, you know, how much we love that, but it reminded you of how special the NBA was back in those days. I mean, back in the, I'm just going to say the 90s. You know, I mean, I was born in the mid 70s, so you know, I started to pay attention. You know, I can remember the Celtics in 86. I mean, I wasn't a big sports fan in 86, but you know, I can remember how dominant they were. But you start getting past 86, 87, 88, and you start talking about, and this is my era, the Larry Birds, the Magic Johnsons, the Michael Jordans, the Patrick Ewings. I mean, the list goes on, the Hakeem Olajuwons. The NBA was the number one thing to watch, I think, in anybody's household. When the NBA came on a weekend, on a Saturday or a Sunday, and it was a Bulls-Knicks game, or if it was a Detroit Pistons and Bulls game, or the Celtics and the Lakers, you couldn't wait to watch those games. To me, the game has evolved into something that I just don't enjoy watching. And we can debate that later on, but we got into the talk about baseball. And we were talking about rule changes, and Arnie is telling me, and I can't deny this, that ratings in baseball are down. And we started talking about reasons why, and he is glad that they're changing the rules, and that we should start, you know, having doubleheaders only go 7 innings. And I like the fact that we're putting in extra innings, we're putting a guy at second base to get the games over quicker. And you know how I feel about that. And what I was trying to articulate yesterday, and obviously the segment was short, was baseball's issue is not the game of baseball or the rules. The issue that baseball has are two things. They do a terrible job of branding it and branding their athletes. And they also have a lot of people that are on social media, on the radio, on television, that get on every single day and tell you baseball is boring. And we have a whole society of people nowadays that just look at these guys and say, oh, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth because I don't know what Dan Patrick thinks or Colin Cowherd thinks. I don't want to put the words in their mouths. But if a guy like Colin Cowherd came out and said, baseball's boring, I don't want to watch it, I can't stand watching it, you are going to have people that look at that and say, well, Colin Cowherd doesn't like it, so I'm not going to like it. And that's where we're at. We are so social media junkies nowadays. That's where we get our information. We start to listen to these people, and they start to kind of influence how we think. Where to me, if you want to better the game of baseball, it's to cherish the game of baseball, raise it up, and sell it, and take your superstar athletes and put them on a pedestal and treat them just like the superstar athletes are of the NFL and the NBA. You put them out there. That's the problem with baseball. So changing rules is not it. I don't care what's going on with the, you know, I understand that this is a money business, and I also understand that when you talk about ratings and baseball ratings are down, fair enough. But we've talked about this a lot, you and I, on this show.
Yeah.
To me, if your team is successful in the game of baseball, if you're a Red Sox fan and your team is in close to first place or competing for a championship, if you're a Royals fan and your team is doing it, if you're a Marlins fan and your team is doing it, your fans are going to flood your stadiums. Your TV rights are going to go through the roof. But if your team is not very good and you're not relevant, then you're not going to do that. But I could say the exact same thing for any NFL team, for any NBA team. And Arnie came back with me with, look, you think Do you think real baseball fans are filling those luxury boxes and number 11 there? I love how Arnie treats his interns. He calls it whatever number they are. That's what he calls them, by the way. But what a great kid number 11 is. That's what they call him on the radio. So I'll continue to say that. But he's a big Mets fan, and it frustrates him that, you know, he'll go to a game at Citi Field and people will stay for 3 hours and then leave. That's their prerogative. But for me, the game of baseball and the sanctity of the rules, and when we start changing rules, to me, it ruins games. Baseball is a perfect example. We've debated many times. I think we've agreed that the rule changes in the NFL have made the NFL a worse product to watch. You can't watch the first 3 weeks of an NFL season and think you've got a good product out there. Because the way the rules are set up for how coaches can coach their teams in the preseason, I think the NBA is, to me, it's unwatchable at sometimes. That's why I respect what's going on in Boston. I took a lot of abuse on the Town Fair Tire text line all week because I feel like the Boston Celtics could compete for a championship because of the system that they run, because of the way their players play and the way Brad Stevens coaches his team, which is actually more of a college style where they play defense and they run something on offense. Very few NBA basketball teams do that. So to me, fixing baseball isn't, and I know I'm running on a rant here, is not about changing rules because there's people in a room that say, this isn't good enough, it's not fast enough, it's boring, or talking heads on radio or television tell you it's boring. It's about taking the game, lifting it up, and putting your superstars in front and letting the game be the game and trusting that it'll work out for you.
Yeah, I think baseball comes up against a couple things, and I may have mentioned one or two of these in the past, but, you know, first of all, the way in which in the last 25 years, 30 years, whatever you want to call it, it's lost that primacy in the national conversation to primarily football. Like basketball overtook it, I think, probably in the late 80s, early 90s, as we were just talking about. And then since then, since like the Jordan era, football has really taken over hogged all that like national airtime, like all that national consciousness airtime. And that, like, that's okay. In that situation, baseball has become a more regionalized sport, which is great for those regional markets, those regional sports networks that are forking over big money to the teams to be able to broadcast their games. That's a good thing for those teams. But it's not good for the league when you don't have big market teams at the end of the season. So, like, if you had a Tampa against, you know, another lesser market,
can I just stop you there? But if you have a Super Bowl that has Jacksonville and Jacksonville and the Rams, that's the same thing.
That game is still going to have, by the nature of it being a one-off on a Sunday, it's a known thing. It's going to have, you know, 40 million people that are just going to tune in because it's on. Like, whereas baseball, it isn't at that level where people who don't really pay attention would tune in anyway. Like, it just doesn't. And I'm not saying change the rules, but like all of this feeds into the point I know I've made before on the show, which is the amount of games they play is problematic when you want to try and brand the game, want to try and get those faces, your stars out there. They're too damn busy between April and October to take any days off to do anything like that. It's basically once the season starts, they're playing baseball. They don't have the time to do any promo stuff. I just don't think they do.
Well, and there's also, like you said, with talent and marketing, you might not care about Jacksonville, but you know Gardner Minshew if you're a football fan, and you might not care about LA and the Rams, but you know Jared Goff. Like, they do a good job of marketing athletes in the NBA and the NFL to the point where it might be a small market team you don't care about, but you know some players on that team that you care about.
NFL their players might be more attractive to whatever. But the point being is whether you're, I don't think baseball needs to try to be the NFL. I think they need to just worry about being baseball. And if you just worry about what you are and who you are and remember who you are in any facet of life and prop that up, just trust it'll happen. Instead of what we're doing is we're changing rules. It's got to be faster. Everything's boring. That's the wrong way to do it. You guys aren't wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong.
Thank you. But you
don't have to fix. You don't have to change rules in the game. You don't have to do things differently in terms of who you are as an organization or a business like baseball. Just be proud of what you are. Get it out there. And create some scenario that people can get to, like a baseball podcast, baseball shows with personalities that are selling it. I mean, I know we got to take a break, but I went to this sit down with Buster Olney and Boog Chombi a couple, you know, before the pandemic for the Lake Monsters, and they basically, I mean, Buster Olney is standing up on the stage telling us that baseball is broken. I mean, Buster Olney is telling us that. It's not broken, it's baseball. Fix it by marketing it. Fix it by going outside the box to sell your product. Don't change the rules of baseball. It doesn't need to happen, but we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do our NFL picks. We got quite a show. We're all over the place. Austin's in another part of the state. We're sitting here in the studio. Don't go anywhere.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
There you go. There you go. You've completely redeemed yourself.
See? Now, I have to find more songs. That's going to be the next challenge.
Thanks for joining us. It is 101.3 The Game Sports Saturday. Jeff, Austin, and Aaron helping you out this morning. Maybe we're not helping you out. You're helping us out by listening to us this morning. Well, maybe we're helping you out. You know, you get
it's
up.
It's a mutually beneficial situation.
I do want to get to the Town Fair Tire text line real quick. Todd just texted. He said, you're completely ignoring the negative impact analytics have had on the game of baseball. Ridiculous defensive shifts, 10 pitching changes a game, and strikeout after strikeout aren't the media's fault, Todd. No, I would say that's the part of the game, and that's part of baseball is strategy. And I'm not blaming the media for any of their failures in terms of where baseball is today. Because I mean, but I'm just saying there is nobody on TV or the radio that or anywhere that is selling the game of baseball. Everything's got to be changed because we have a momentary blip where it's quote unquote too boring for a sect of people. That's just my straight opinion. So yeah, I hear you on that. There are a lot of strikeouts, but that's the game of baseball. And you have to sell what you have and be proud of what you have. And that's how I look at it. But we can get into that later on because right now it's time to get into the Week 15 NFL picks. And by the way, I'm in last place now. So thanks for sharing that with me, Aaron.
I went 11-4 this week.
That's unbelievable. And that's like you could have your own site in Las Vegas when you're 11-4 with the number each week.
Oh yeah, 100-109 definitely makes me worthy of prognostication.
Just got to get above 500.
Hey, listen, I had people this week on the huddle tell us that Jalen Hurts is the man now. He's the second coming, and he basically had a half a football that was any good. So on that basis, you're one of the best football prognosticators in the country.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to jump there with Hurts. Yeah,
all right, kiddo, let's go.
Buffalo Bills at Denver Broncos +5.5.
I love the Denver Broncos. I think that they are going in a direction that their fans should be excited about. Drew Lock is the real deal. I love the way they play. But this week, this is winning time, right? This isn't like middle of the season where, you know, a team could have a down week. Everybody's locked in. I've been impressed with the Buffalo Bills the last few weeks. In fact, I think they might be, I can't believe I'm saying this, and I'm probably going to hear it on the Town Fair Tire Text line, they might be the best team in the AFC right now, top to bottom. I love what they're doing. I'm gonna give the 5.5, and Buffalo goes on the road and beats the Broncos this week.
And it's making me concerned now that I'm agreeing with Mr. Last Place. I was stunned at how good the Broncos were last week. I mean, they made my pick look downright foolish. But I still don't think even at 5.5 points you pick against the Bills yet. I know it's on the road. I know it's mile high, but I like the Bills.
I have the Bills as well. I just think they're that good.
Yeah.
Carolina Panthers at Green Bay Packers -8.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers are up and down team. I'm going to say the same thing. This is winning time now. These teams have to win, and there's a lot of things that are up for grabs still in the NFC. I'm going to give the 8 and take the Packers, but I'm not comfortable with it. I like the Carolina Panthers a lot.
The Packers last week, they got it done by 7 against the Lions, but I guess I got to go Packers. I like the Panthers last week too. I'm picking against the lesser two evils. I'll go Packers.
I've got the Packers as well. Their offense has just been really good this year. Hard to see any team really shutting them down. Although you're right, Detroit did do a good job last week.
And the number that's a big number. I think that's 8's a lot.
San Francisco 49ers at Dallas Cowboys +3.
Yeah, you know, the 49ers last week, if they didn't allow Washington to score points on defense, they would have won that football game last week. Dallas looked pretty good against Cincinnati, and we know Cincinnati's not the team that they were before Joe Burrow. I'm going to take Dallas at home, and I'm going to take the three. I'm not going to be rooting for it, though. I mean, I really do want the 49ers to win the game, but I'll take the Cowboys, and I'll take the 3 points.
Yeah, I'm thinking Cowboys plus three based on last week, which could be an overreaction. But to make Washington look good like that isn't something. And I know Washington's better. Washington's better, but I'm still hung up on that. So I'm Cowboys as well.
I've got the 49ers. I think Shanahan bounces back. I don't think Dallas is very good. I just think the Niners are the better team out of those two. Seahawks at the Washington football team plus 6.5.
Yeah, you know, listen, and don't take this the wrong way. I am so impressed with what Washington has done. I mean, this football team has turned a corner. That defense, and I think right now the way they're playing, that defense is the best defense in the NFL, bar none. But last week, losing Alex Smith, Dwayne Haskins looks like he's going to be under center this week. I am going to take the Seahawks. I'm going to give them the 6.5 points. And I just said it a second ago. If San Francisco didn't give up 14 points against that defense, meaning the defense for Washington scored 14 points, San Francisco wins that game last week, and we're talking about a different Washington team. So I'm going to take Seattle on the road, another game that the Seattle Seahawks really have to win, and I have them beating Washington, and I'll lay the 6.5.
Yeah, without Alex Smith, I don't feel as comfortable with Washington, even at home. I think, if Russell Wilson has a good game, I think the Seahawks have a good game, and they win this comfortably, so I'll take them.
Washington's recipe this year has been consistency on offense and strength on defense, and I don't think a quarterback change is conducive for that scheme. So I think Washington might have a little bit of a rough week. I think Seattle's good enough to exploit it. I've got the Seahawks as well. Chicago Bears at Minnesota Vikings minus 3.
Well, the Bears surprised everybody last week, huh?
I mean, yeah.
Nobody saw that coming, but I'm still going to take Minnesota minus 3. Minnesota in a playoff position potentially. They're playing better football. I'm going to take Kirk Cousins. I'm going to give the Bears 3 and take the Vikes at home.
You can't quit your Kirk Cousins, can
no,
you?
No, I'm kind of I'm over him. I'm over him now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not on him. I'm not on the bandwagon anymore.
I don't know.
Was there ever a bandwagon for Kirk Cousins? I was driving it, if there
yeah,
was.
You were.
I'm more of a Cook fan and a Thielen fan and a Jefferson fan. I'm not much of a you know, Cousins fan anymore, but
you're hooked on a Thielen. Gotcha. I'm gonna go Bears. Last week surprised the heck out of me, and I'll stick with it for now, just because I remain just, you know, eternally unconvinced by the Vikings.
I'm kind of hoping Bill Belichick's hooked on a Thielen.
I don't blame you.
Love to see that happen. I don't believe in the Vikings either, Austin. They've sort of disappointed me this season in general. So I think I've got the Bears. Just because their defense is at least a bright spot. New England Patriots at the Dolphins minus 1.5.
Everything tells me to pick the Dolphins here. But I would tell you right now, I said it this week when I was on the huddle, I'd feel a lot better about the Dolphins if Fitzpatrick was starting. I think Tua is the future. I think he's going to be a great quarterback in this league. I think he's going to lead them to some AFC championships potentially, some AFC East championships potentially. But I'd feel more comfortable with the Dolphins if Fitzpatrick was under center, just because I think he can create more offense. Not that you're going to need a whole lot, but I think the Patriots' defense comes in, and I think they send a message. I really do. They may not go to the playoffs, but they're going to send a message. We're not going to leave being the team to beat in the AFC East easily. And I have them going on the road, which is unheard of, right, for the Patriots, even when Brady was there, to win late season in Miami. I'm going to take the 1.5 points and take the Patriots.
Yeah, this feels like an easy pick for me. Patriots in a game they have to win. And particularly roll out the cliche here, if Belichick is coaching against a first-year guy, that's usually a recipe for success for the Patriots. I agree. I think if it was Fitzpatrick, a guy that's seen the Patriots a ton of times, I'd be more inclined to pick the Dolphins, maybe to cover, but this time it's the Patriots.
I agree 100%. It's a cliche because they're 11-0 against rookie quarterbacks, and there's already sort of a book out on how to beat Tua. I know it's early. I know that book may not stay the same, but sort of the book is, if you take the middle of the field away, it makes his life really hard. Bill Belichick knows how to take advantage of young quarterbacks. I feel pretty good about New England this week. Jacksonville Jaguars at Baltimore Ravens minus 13.
We're kind of against the clock, so we can't really be as elaborate as we want to here, but you know how much Jacksonville covers. It seems they do every week, but I'm not going to do that this week. The Ravens look like they're playing at a different level. I'll take the Ravens, and I'll give the 13.
I'm Ravens, too. I don't think Jacksonville can cut that deficit. They just haven't.
I've got the Jags. Baltimore's got 5 corners who are either out or questionable, and I think it's going to be hard to stay 2 touchdowns ahead when half your defensive backs are gone. Let's see here. Lost my spot.
Bucks at Atlanta.
Bucks at Falcons.
Bucks at Falcons plus 6.5.
Yeah, I told you it's winning time. Tom Brady understands it. The team needs it. I think Tampa Bay is going to make a real run at this when the playoffs start. When the in the NFC side, I got the Bucks going on the road against the Falcons and winning. I don't care what the number is.
Yep, Bucks. I'm right there with you.
I've got the Bucks as well. Lions at Titans minus 11.5.
I mean, there's not a more Jekyll and Hyde team than Tennessee, but it's winning time. This is a time of year where good teams have to win. Detroit is up and down as well, more down than up. I'll take Tennessee and I'll lay the 11.5.
Yeah, one of these teams is better than the other, and it's Tennessee.
Tennessee may be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but there's not a whole lot of doctorate stuff going on at all at Detroit. I've got the Titans as well. Houston Texans at Colts minus 7.5.
My hot take right now is that this Indianapolis Colts team is going to make a run for the AFC Championship. They're going to be a potential winner of that side and might go to the Super Bowl. I love what I've seen all year. I'm going to give the 7.5 and take the Colts. I think they're going to do it.
Texans let me down big time last week, and
yes,
the Colts didn't. So I'm going to go Colts.
I've got the Colts as well. Philly at Arizona, minus 6.5.
Jalen Hurts got exposed in the second half. I know Eagles fans are just running all over the place thinking that they're back in this thing. Jalen Hurts is not the future of this team, I don't think. I think, and in one half, the Saints figured it out. I am going to take the Cardinals at home, giving the 6.5, and I think they get it done.
The Eagles had a glimmer last week, but the Cardinals beat a better team last week. So I'm Cardinals too.
I've got the Cardinals as well, I think. They exploit the Eagles' defense with their offense. Jets at Rams, minus 17.
I'll take the Rams. Let's move on.
Rams.
I'm sorry, Jets fans. You don't mean to laugh. I'm sorry.
No, we do.
Well, maybe you do. I don't. I've been there. I understand that pain.
I don't feel bad at all. Rams. Kansas City Chiefs at New Orleans Saints, plus 3. I feel bad about my reading.
I mean, it looks like Breeze is back, but 3 points? Give me the Chiefs all day.
Yeah, they've been playing down to people. I don't think that's going to last forever. I got Chiefs as well.
I also have the Chiefs. Cleveland at the Giants, plus 6.
Yeah, a lot of things are not going the Giants' way here. I mean, whether it's Daniel Jones or not, we can get into that later on. It could be Colt McCoy. James Bradbury was close to somebody with COVID, so he's on the COVID watch list. It looks like he's not going to play. The Giants are getting 6 points. They have to win. You're never as bad as you look or good as you look. I'm going to take my Giants. I know I'm a homer. I'm doing it because I am a homer today, folks. I want them to win. Cleveland looks good. I'm just going to hope that the Giants find a way. I'll take the Giants. I'll take the 6.
I'm going to go Browns.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, thank you.
I've got the Browns too. Gut feeling, you know? Pittsburgh Steelers at Cincinnati Bengals, plus 13.
An angry Steelers team and an angry Big Ben. I'll take the Steelers on the road at the Bengals.
Yeah, Bengals, I don't think they have what it takes to overcome that deficit. So, yeah, Steelers.
Cincinnati will fulfill their role as the division's punching bag this weekend. Pittsburgh's going to take it out on them. I've got the Steelers as well. Those are the week 15 picks.
Yeah, all right, put them in the bank, baby. I'll tell you what, NFC East. Are we going to just basically take this all the way to the top, or do you want to take a break? It's up to you. You're the producer. What should we do?
We should take a break.
Take a break. All right, we'll come right back with our top of the hour when Aaron gets to tell everybody what's going on here. And then after that, we got some great guests, so don't go anywhere.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Yeah, no out in left field this time. You know, we got into all these other topics. We had to get the picks in. So next week, actually, are we even on the air next week? It's the day after Christmas. Are we going to be?
We should probably have that conversation, right?
Yeah, I think we have to ask the bigwigs about that. So we don't even know if we're on next week. And then the week after that is the day after New Year's. So, I mean, do they work? Do you work in the radio business the day after these holidays? I have no idea.
That information's above my pay.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. You may not hear. This might be good. This might be an early Christmas gift. You may not hear us for 2 weeks.
Vacation for all parties.
Yeah, no kidding. I hope that's not the case. We love doing this show. But we'll find out that. We'll let you know later on. All right, we're going to try to get Eric Bolin, New York Newsday writer. He's a writer for the Yankees, and I think the Yankees right now are an interesting story. We're going to try to get Eric on the line, and our phone lines right now are a little bit weird, so Aaron is in the process of doing that right now. But
it's a flip-flop of resetting them, and then they work for a while,
yeah,
and then they stop working.
So we're going to work on getting Eric. But in the meantime, you know, we were talking a little bit, and we kind of touched a little bit on him, and this is going to be off base of what we're going to talk to Eric about. But I think the NFC East, I want to get into what kind of an interesting story. I mean, last week the Giants did not look good at all, and for whatever reason that was, whether that's Arizona or the fact that Daniel Jones was hurt and the game plan wasn't very good. And I know people got on me all week about Daniel Jones and how I feel about him. I totally believe he's going to be a top 10, top 5 kind of quarterback in this league. But last week for the Giants, Austin, I don't know if you watched the game, Daniel Jones came out and played, but the game plan that was put in place for him was to keep him in the pocket. You could just tell he wasn't running. Mm-hmm. There were no set runs for him or plays to get him outside the pocket and have him throw on the run. You could tell they're really trying to protect that hamstring. And if you're going to play that game tomorrow against Cleveland, you're going to see a lot of the same stuff you saw last week because Daniel Jones' weapons are not compatible to that. The Giants don't have guys that can separate. So where he can just sit in the back and have his athletes be athletes. When you're talking about guys like Shepard, you're talking about guys like, and right now, and I think Darius Slayton will be that guy, but he's hurt too.
Yeah.
Evan Engram isn't the kind of guy that's going to run away, I don't think. At least he hasn't done it yet from a good linebacker. The offensive line did a poor job protecting. So it just was a bad mix. I think retrospect, the game plan was wrong. And if you can't be, and if Daniel Jones tomorrow, and I don't know if they've announced yet that he's going to be, when I was going into the show, they hadn't announced anything. If Daniel Jones cannot be Daniel Jones tomorrow, and he had another injury in that game where he sprained his ankle. If he cannot be himself where he has the ability to run and defenses have to defend that, then the Giant offense can't really be the Giant offense.
Yeah. No, they didn't look like it last week either. I think that was the thing. I mean, by looking at the score, you know, you would have thought, well, Daniel Jones either didn't play, had an awful week, or Colt McCoy had an awful week because Daniel Jones didn't play. You can say pretty fairly that was their worst outing in a month and a half, right?
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. And I also would say that you know, the offensive, I mean, again, there were some turnovers, but the turnovers, I don't really blame him for those turnovers. They were, you know, one of them was, he basically, ball was snapped, he turned around, and Marcus Golden was basically where was there when the ball got there. Ball's fumbled. To me, I thought the Giant defense looked awesome last week. I know the score wasn't indicative to it. The score was definitely not indicative to it, but it definitely, to me, was what you expected to be. They basically limited Arizona, who was in the Giant end of the field the whole game, to field goals until there was a great play by Kyler Murray on third down. It was just an unbelievable play. So the Giant defense stepped up, but I think they just kind of got worn down because the offense was so anemic. But I think if you go into this game this week for the Giants, and if Colt McCoy's a healthier quarterback, and like I said, Daniel Jones can't be Daniel Jones, you got a shot because his defense is ferocious now. James Bradbury's out. That's a big loss for the Giants. But the Giants have enough depth there that I think they can make up for that. And I know that the Baker Mayfield and the Browns have looked really good the last 2 weeks, and good for them. Good for them. Because, I mean, going into those games, I've been saying it, and, you know, we talk about it. I never thought that the arrogance that Baker Mayfield has and all the commercials he is on constitutes how good he is. But he's looked really good the last couple weeks. And, again, you got to give them a ton of credit for that. But I think the NFL is a week-to-week league, and if the Giants can do anything on offense, field position will be a big deal. I know how good Cleveland runs the ball, but the Giants defend the run really, really well. I think it's going to give themselves a chance. In retrospect, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm trying to think. Like, do the Browns have what it takes to stop even a so-so offense? They have given up a good chunk of points this year. I mean, they've given up. Looking like close to 30 points a game. I just doing quick math in my head here. So I think if there's a week you could get by perhaps without having, you know, everything flowing on offense, this might be it.
802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. 802-655-6672. We're still trying to get Eric Bolin of New York Newsday talk a little bit about the Yankees, or you can join us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the same number, 802-655-6672. But right now we're not talking about the Yankees because Eric Bolin isn't with us. We're talking about the NFC East. And a team that's rolling in the NFC East is the Washington football team, who has gone on the road the last 2 weeks and knocked off an undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers team and then went all the way across the country and didn't have to go all the way to San Francisco but went to Arizona and beat a very wounded, but again, on the road again, San Francisco football team that had a lot to play for as well. And normally, I think I would say, and I mean this with all sincerity, as I'm a diehard Giants fan, but I feel as if I'm fairly honest and I tell you what I think. Normally, I would think that this is Washington's to lose. But not having Alex Smith under center makes this offense very, very poor. Now, again, give Haskins a little bit of a pass as he did not come into that game thinking he was starting. He comes off the bench. San Francisco does have a good defense. And obviously, you know, he did enough to help them get a victory. But if it wasn't for Washington picking up a fumble late in the first half and running it in for a touchdown, and as San Francisco is driving, and I think it was in the third quarter, and having a pick six, Washington loses last week and is probably feeling a lot worse about themselves because of the quarterback situation. And I think that is the big thing. That's the big storyline. So that's a big deal. The other thing here, Austin, is Philadelphia last week, who people have been laughing at, decide to sit Carson Wentz, bring in Jalen Hurts, and let's just be honest. The first half of that game against who everybody seemed to think was the best team in the NFC, the New Orleans Saints, they had a 17-0 lead. But I watched all of that game, and I will just say that you could see the adjustments that were absolutely made on New Orleans' side to take Jalen Hurts out of what they were trying to do. And I think he was exposed. I think you're going to see more of it this weekend. But the Eagles got themselves, they knock off the New Orleans Saints, and then the Cowboys win as well. So for the NFC East, I mean, all of a sudden it's kind of exciting, right? I mean, I know the records aren't great, but all these teams have a legitimate chance to do something. Oh, wait a minute. Do we have them? Do we have them? Perfect. We got to change the subject because joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line here on Sports Saturday is New York Newsday's Yankee beat writer Eric Boland. Eric, thanks so much for taking the time today, buddy.
Charles, no problem at all. Sorry about the little screw up. I typed in my wrong phone number. When you guys tried to get in touch with me,
you
did not succeed.
Well, Eric, we appreciate you calling, and there's a lot of people that don't give me the right phone number, so you're not the only one. I'm just going to say. All right, Eric, let's get into it here. Up here in Burlington, Vermont, where it's about 5 degrees right now, and people probably aren't talking about baseball, but the Yankees are kind of in a very interesting position right now, as I think the best player on their team, DJ LeMahieu, is about to test free agency. And tell me if I'm right or wrong here. Brian Cashman is basically saying to him, hey, why don't you just go try it out, let us know how it goes, and then come back and see if we can counter that offer. Where are we standing here with LeMahieu and the Yankees?
You know, Jeff, I don't think it's quite as dramatic as, you know, some people may remember. What was 8 or 9 years ago when Derek Jeter was a free agent and he was, I believe, coming off his 37 or 38-year-old season. And that was a very ugly contract negotiation. And essentially, Cashman publicly said to Jeter, hey, you're a free agent. If you think you can do better than our offer, go to it. Knowing full well that Jeter wasn't going to sign with anyone else.
Yeah.
And knowing full well that nobody was going to come close to offering a 38-year-old shortstop the kind of money, even at a reduced cost, what the Yankees were offering, no one was going to come close to offering Jeter that. And so, in reality, he kind of publicly embarrassed Jeter, and that created a tension between Jeter and Cashman that frankly hasn't entirely gone away. And you remember after Jeter signed that contract, he talked about how, quote, angry he was at the whole process, and you very rarely heard Jeter publicly talk like that. The purpose of my long preamble is I don't believe that this is that type of situation where Cashman is looking to send any kind of a message to LeMahieu, but Cashman is under marching orders from managing general partner Hal Steinbrenner to bring payroll underneath the $210 million luxury tax threshold, which is what it'll be next season. And this is not going to be an open checkbook type of situation the way it was last winter when Hal Steinbrenner essentially said to Cashman, we're targeting Garrett Cole. Do what you have to do to make him a Yankee. That's not going to be the case with DJ LeMahieu. All of that said, I do believe when this shakes out, LeMahieu will be back in a Yankee uniform. But, to use a phrase of Cashman's, and I think he said it after the Jeter contract negotiation, sometime you have to walk through fire to get to where, you ultimately want to go.
I think all Yankee fans, including this one, hopes that happens. But if that does happen, so what falls next? Are you really going to go through another season with Gleyber Torres at shortstop? Because that was not good last year.
No, it wasn't good, but they believe that, look, people I think forget the Jeter, that Gleyber Torres did come up in his minor league career as a natural shortstop, and that second base was actually the position that he ended up having to learn at the big league level, and obviously did fairly well. They did quite well, certainly from the offensive side, and he was fine defensively. I'm not sure that 60 games is indicative of the type of shortstop that, and I know Torres played, I think, 40 or 42, something like that, but that few amount of games is enough to determine that a 23 or 24 year old can't play a position. Guys are allowed to get better. They're allowed to improve. And frankly, look, the Yankees don't have a lot of options because if they do sign LeMahieu, I think that's going to probably be it in terms of big signings for the Yankees. Ooh. Insofar as free agent contracts. Obviously, you can't roll out a trade of some kind. And I believe ultimately, you know, the rest of the roster is going to be filled out, you know, in terms of more trade than free agent signings. But, you know, they do still believe in Gleyber Torres as a shortstop. And so I do think if LeMahieu does re-sign with the Yankees, that you will see another season of Gleyber Torres at shortstop. But I would not be surprised if they, you know, bring in a veteran presence behind him, a sure fielding type of guy that could be maybe a late defensive replacement. We know how, you know, Aaron Boone and the Yankees love to do that in a variety of positions. And I think you could see that at shortstop next year as well.
Do you think that Gleyber Torres, and again, this, but does he have a body type to be a short? He's a big kid. You know what I mean? He looks like a second baseman or a third baseman. You know, the range issue is what bothers me, and he's gotten bulked up. He's going to be. He wants to be a home run hitter. That's what makes me nervous. As he gets older, he's getting broader. That doesn't bode well to be a great defensive shortstop, Eric.
No, it doesn't, Jeff. And I think this is, you know, one of the criticisms. And Brian Cashman said it a couple of weeks ago in an interview. Yankees were, you know, Gleyber Torres came. You know, showed up for spring training too, overweight, and you know that big body that you talked about, you know, was even bigger, and not in a muscular bulked up type of way, but in a you know, overweight type of way, an out of shape type of way, and one of the things the Yankees felt is Torres really never got, for lack of a better phrase, his legs under him last year, because he basically was using the season to get back into shape for a variety of reasons. He obviously was not as committed to his conditioning during the quarantine and leading into spring training too, which started in early July, and he was sort of fighting an uphill battle from there. Again, in a general sense, Jeff, I just think that at 23 years old, I think we all make the mistake, and I'm as guilty as anyone, of deciding that what a guy is at 21, 22, 23 years old is what he's going to be for his entire career. I mean, I got a kick out of after 1 year of Miguel Andujar a couple of years ago at third base, people filling up my Twitter feed or my email box saying, oh, he'll never be a third baseman, thinking, let's see, he's just finished third or second in Rookie of the Year voting in the American League. A lot of people thought he should have won it. And we're deciding he can't be a third baseman. He's 23 years old. I think that sometimes we need to step back and take a deep breath. And keep in mind, if Torres hits 40 home runs and you know, has a 850 or 900 OPS, people will live with errors at shortstop or at any position pretty easily.
Who are these fans that are texting you about that that's crazy talk. He first of all, Andujar got robbed from being the American League Rookie of the Year that year, number one. I thought for sure at the end of the season he was the next thing. Obvious, but that's another topic for another day. We don't have a lot of time. Those people are crazy. They're sending you those messages, Eric. Crazy. But
Jeff, people are doing the same thing with Gleyber Torres. Same age as Andujar.
That's true. All right. Well, Gary Sanchez. I was, when the season was over, I was ready to send Gary Sanchez to whatever team wanted him. You know, this is the frustration I have with the Yankees. The Yankees, I don't think, can win with him. He's proven to be a problem defensively. He is not an asset at the plate. In fact, to the point where in a must-win game, he wasn't even starting. Are the Yankees really banking on the fact that he's going to come back? I know he's having a decent – I've been following a little bit in the Dominican League or wherever he's playing right now in the Winter League, and he's playing pretty well. But do the Yankees really expect him to be the guy that everybody thinks he was going to be?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think when you start talking about spring training storylines, and they had no better time than the present,
right.
He's at the top of the list. because, you know, the Yankees made clear, I mean, for all the happy talk during the postseason about, oh, we believe in Gary, et cetera, when the rubber hit the road, he was not starting the most important games. I believe it was 5 out of the 7 playoff games the Yankees played were started by Kyle Higashioka, and that included the deciding game 5. With Gerrit Cole on the mound, and Gerrit Cole obviously made clear at some point during the 60-game shortened season that he much preferred having Higashioka behind the plate, and the Yankees just sort of pretended that none of that was happening. Brian Cashman certainly did acknowledge it at his end-of-season press conference, and said as critical things as he's ever said about Sanchez. And he's always been his number one defender in the organization. But then Cashman, just this past week, when he did a Zoom call with reporters, called Sanchez, said he will go into spring training as the heir apparent. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but essentially said he's going into spring training as the number one catcher this year. How long that lasts? And if that is, you know, completely the way the Yankees feel, we'll see, because they kept saying that about Sanchez going into the playoffs last year, and then we saw how that played out. I do think that I'm not making excuses for Sanchez, but I can tell you, texting and talking to executives and talent evaluators from other teams in the last year, Gary Sanchez is a guy that other teams will be interested in, because there's a lot of thought that he would be the ultimate change of scenery guy, that for whatever reason, maybe the ship has sailed in New York, but with that arm that he has, which is still among the best that any catcher has, his improvements in terms of pitch framing, which all the numbers show he's gotten better at that, and the bat potential is still there, and he's still only 27 years old. 26, 27 years old. And so I can tell you other teams would be interested in him. That's not going to come down the road for certainly not you know, the next year or so, because the Yankees are bringing him to spring training. They tendered him a contract, and you know they're going to give it another run. I think the talent does necessitate whatever, giving him one last shot. I know a lot of the Yankee fans disagree with that, and I don't have a lot of facts to back up why, you know, to counter their argument. I can understand Yankee fans' frustration, but I think if you do look at Sanchez's first, let's say, year and a half as a big leaguer, you know, that is talent that you would like to tap into again. Maybe it's a little bit too soon to give up on it.
Eric, we have 10 seconds left. You got to be quick. If the Yankees re-sign LeMahieu, can this team win a World Series next year?
Yes, I believe it can.
You're the best. Eric Bolin from New York Newsday. Thanks for the time. Have a happy holiday. I got to have you on again because I got a lot more questions for you, my friend.
Understood. I filibustered a little bit, so that's on me. Thank you, Jeff.
No problem, buddy. Happy holidays. The great Eric Bolin from New York Newsday. Interesting topics about the Yankees. We take a quick break when we come back. We go from baseball to football. That's what we do here on Sports Saturday. We just jump all over the place. Don't go anywhere. Tom King with the Pats is next. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. 802-655-6672 is the number to call, but don't do it because you can't get through in our phone lines right now. Don't do that. Don't do that. But I will say you can join us on the text line at the Town Fair Tire text line. Same exact number, 802-655-6672. Have you got Austin on the line? Do you have Austin lit up yet? Because I know he was just trying to talk. You back there, buddy?
I hope so.
Okay, so here's what's happening right now, folks. So right now I've got to give our guy Aaron Wells a bunch of props. He is like running like a madman in here. We were able to get Eric Bolin because we were able to get him into our system quick enough before the phone line could kick out. So right now I just got off my cell phone with Tom King, and we're trying to do that with him. So while we're waiting for Tom King, let's kind of like regroup ourselves here. Calm down.
The meta irony of watching this all unfold, like the phone trouble and then the immediate like promo coming back. Phone lines are now open. And are they? Or no, they're not.
We're not sure what's going on here. But right now, Aaron Wells, being the great producer he is, has got our guy, Tom King, the TikTok Jewelers guest line, our Patriots
insider. It's like Tommy Lee Jones and The Fugitive. He always gets his man.
We've got Tom King. Good morning, Tom. Happy holidays. Thank you for dealing with all the craziness in our studio today and joining us. What's happening, my man?
Alan, it was the Newsday guy. He screwed it all up. That's what happened.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I will tell you.
But I'll tell you what, though. I have something in common with Gleyber Torres because I showed up to cover summer baseball this season overweight and out of shape. So I know how he feels.
And I'm sure he feels a lot better about that, too. Knowing
I know, I'm sure.
He and Tom King are in the same boat. Hey, so listen, I have to bring this up to you. I was able to co-host the weekly show this week, The Huddle, with Arnie Spanier. And one of the topics that came up, and we have it on our poll question today, is that WEEI's Gary Tangway said that Bill Belichick is not the right guy to rebuild these Patriots. How do you feel about that? Is that correct? Do you feel the same way?
Well, I mean, I don't. You know, look, Belichick's not going to be around for a long time, so I think that's going to be a factor. I mean, he's in his late 60s. You know, he's already gone on record as saying he doesn't want to be Marv Levy, although he's just about there. Where Levy coached into his 70s and then ran the Bills for a while, which people I think forget about. He was in charge there too. No, I mean, I think Belichick's the right guy to do it. I think that what has to happen is some of the people around him have got to get a little better, and because there's obviously something wrong with their scouting in terms of some of the players they're bringing in at the skill positions. Because the one thing that the New England Patriots don't have that you desperately need in today's NFL is speed. They don't have a lot of it. And I think they're going to have to do a lot better job of trying to get some of that speed through the draft, through free agency, and do whatever they can do to you know, make this team better. But it's you know, it, basically, guys, what they're going through this year is they've had holes in the past and weaknesses in the past, but there was a guy named, you know, Brady that used to cover those up for them with the way he was able to put points on the board. They don't have that ability to score now because they don't have the passing game. And that right now you can look at a lot of different things and a lot of different weaknesses. They've always had some of those weaknesses, but right now they just can't put up enough points on the scoreboard.
Tom, you're talking about, you know, scouting and speed. And, like, is it just a matter of they're not, like, that just isn't in the equation? I mean, it always seemed like they've scouted and acquired guys that are, you know, fit better for intangibles than, you know, those more measurables.
Right.
Is that time past? Like, is the league at a place right now where they can't do, like, you just can't afford to do that anymore?
Well, they were at a place where they could get those intangible players and make them, you know, fit their system and do things that were really good for them that no one else had. And they put an emphasis on the 40th man, the 45th man, the 48th man. They all were able to make big plays for them in crucial situations and games because they had the quarterback who could pick it up at the other end. So, in other words, they never had all the players that I'm talking about that they need to go out and get because they didn't need them as much. Now they need them more. And until, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, they fought hard to keep Nick Caserio on board. And, you know, Caserio is going to have to go out, and they're also going to have to take a look at their scouts. Look, I remember the video, the film of the drafting of N'Keal Harry, where it was between N'Keal Harry and another player at the last spot in that round. And Belichick hemmed and hawed and took a long time to decide and then just blurted out the words, Harry. And they grabbed him. And something made Belichick hesitate about that. But they took a chance on N'Keal Harry, and it just hasn't panned out. They can't afford to have those misses anymore. You know, you go back 4 years ago where they had a draft where they brought in four players, none of whom are there on the team anymore. Those years eventually catch up to you in the NFL. The reason it didn't catch up to the Patriots as quickly as we all thought it might was because they had Brady, they had Gronkowski, they had Edelman in his prime, they had players who could make plays and score points, and now they don't have that, and it all catches up to them in 1 year.
But Tom, don't you think, to play a little devil's advocate here, but doesn't this have to play into the hands of the fact that, you know, this year I think they expected to have Edelman, and obviously he hasn't been around. Harry hasn't met the expectation yet, but you bring in, you know, there's no training camp. You bring in a quarterback in Cam Newton that really, I mean, I think he's played over what the expectation really should have been for him. They were in a but don't you think?
Jeff, that camping trip has really ruined you. Do you really think they brought in Cam Newton thinking that he was going to throw the ball for 78 yards in a football game?
No. I don't think that's the case.
It's abysmal. The passing game is abysmal. They did not expect this from Cam Newton. What they expected from Cam Newton was what they got the first three games of the season.
But that's my point.
And it ended up that they're not getting that. Opt-outs have hurt them. They lost Chung. They lost Hightower. They lost some real key players who would have made a difference defensively and maybe in a couple of other spots. They did have a training camp. I was down there for a couple of them. You know, they didn't have a preseason, but, you know, the owners are trying to cut that back to two games anyway. So, I mean, you could take all those factors. I think once the opt-outs happened, I think Belichick knew he was looking at a 9-7 type of football team. I think he knew that. And it was just a matter of how they were going to play and how they were going to be able to try to make up for some of their deficiencies. But now they got to get to work. This is an off season now where they really have to get to work, and they'll draft a little higher than they have. You know, you don't get better through the draft as much when you're picking in the last, you know, pick or next to last pick or fourth to last pick of every round. So, you know, those are some of the things that they're going to have to take a look at. And I wouldn't bet against. You know, they had a good draft. I thought they had a decent draft for where they were picking and some of the things that they had to do. But, you know, granted, there are picks that they really would wish they had over again. And, you know, at some point they're going to have to strike it in free agency and bring in some players who can make a difference.
Aaron has a comment. I have to just say, you didn't sign Cam Newton at whatever the contract is, which is bare-bones contract, and expect him to come in and lead you to the playoffs. I think that there was a hope there. So my point being is he had a really good first three, four games, went on the COVID situation,
right,
and came back and hasn't recovered. Whatever the reasoning is, the team hasn't gelled.
He hasn't recovered.
I agree.
They knew they weren't getting the Cam Newton MVP, all right? But they didn't think they were getting the Cam Newton, you know, is there anybody else out there who could get the quarterback or football team?
What I'm saying is, to me, they are signing away of a quarterback that can you know, a consistent quarterback to being relevant again. I understand the speed piece on offense, but defensively they still got those pieces that can run around, so they're going to be in games. And if you can find a quarterback that can get these guys the ball that can help these players, these offensive players create separation, I think the Patriot fix is quicker than that. I don't know. I mean, again, you're there. You know better than me. But I think
the fix may be quicker, maybe for a season, you know. But long term, I mean, they're going to need to get some speed, but they're also going to need a long term solution at the quarterback position. And Cam Newton is not the answer. It's clear that he's not the answer, and I don't think they're going to bring him back. I really don't. They like him. They like him personally. They like his work ethic. You know, he doesn't grouse. He doesn't complain. You know, I mean, he doesn't, you know, say, I don't, you know, don't have this or it is what it is or anything like that. He doesn't pout like the way Brady did last year. I mean, we couldn't go through another year of that, or they couldn't go through another year of that. But they've got to get better production out of that. And if Jarrett Stidham can't beat out Cam Newton the way Cam Newton is playing right now, then it's probably pretty clear that Stidham is not the answer either.
So I don't want to get too...
They're going to have to solve a quarterback position in the next year.
Yeah, I don't want to get too, you know, caught up in the weeds on receiver talk, but we were talking about N'Keal Harry not panning out. He can't get separation very well. We've seen that.
Right.
But he has shown that he doesn't necessarily need separation to make tough catches. Is that the kind of game that you think Bill would be willing to risk in order to get some big plays and maybe try and... Because I know the playoff picture is very, very slim right now, in order to try and get some hope in these next couple games?
N'Keal Harry was brought in to make those kinds of catches where he'd go up and grab the football. There's no question about that. They knew they weren't getting a speed burner in N'Keal Harry. But N'Keal Harry hasn't made enough of those plays, and he hasn't run very good routes for them either.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot of things there that go into it. And the bottom line is N'Keal Harry hasn't produced. He's been basically a bust now. This is his second year. If he doesn't progress a lot in his third year. They've got some issues.
Yeah, so and N'Keal Harry gets me to what I was trying to get at with the talk about scouting before. When I think about N'Keal Harry in that draft, I'm thinking, why didn't they take DK Metcalf? Yeah. Like, is it a matter of
you
system?
You go back all the time. I mean, you can go back to how many drafts where they had other big-time receivers that they haven't grabbed. Receivers are, you know, if you don't pick a receiver in the top 15, after that, it's a crapshoot. And, you know, they like Harry's ability to go up and grab the football. That's what they liked about him. And they felt that they needed that at the time, especially knowing that Gronkowski probably wasn't going to be around. I mean, actually, Gronkowski had already retired, I think, right, when they picked Harry?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They needed to send Gronkowski. Gronk could always do that. Gronk could go up and get the football. So they knew that was Brady, what Brady was used to. And they felt that N'Keal Harry would fit that, even though he wasn't a tight end. He was a guy who could go up and grab the ball in midair and fight defenders for the football. And that's what they wanted.
Tom King, you're the best. Happy holidays. We'll do this again. And thanks for taking the time, my man.
Anytime, guys. Good Giant talk, good Yankee talk. I love it. Keep it up.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon. All right, Hot or Not's next. Don't go anywhere.
Don't worry about putting on that winter coat because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
All right, kiddo, what do you got today, my man?
Tough day to have to do a cupcake read. I'm really hungry. Really hungry. Superb Cupcakes brings you Hot or Not. They're open for curbside pickup. Available flavors are posted on their Facebook and Instagram pages daily. You can call them today at 802-871-5941 and place your order for contact-free pickup.
Today's cupcake of the day is the eggnog cupcake, which you boys know we've already had one of those already, which
so
I know
good.
Both of you are big fans of.
It's very noggy.
Yeah. that's what they should call it. Noggy.
A noggy Christmas.
Oh, yeah. You're so noggy. Oh, man. Guys, it's where we're going. Feel free to use that one. Well done, Austin. That was very, very well played. But, guys, you know, we tell you every year, every day, every year, every week, we talk about Superb Cupcakes. They are the best. And seasonally, they've got such great seasonal cupcakes. So, you know, the fall was amazing. Thanksgiving, they had fun ones. And now it's the holidays. They've got tremendous, tremendous cupcakes. Check them out in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston. You will not be disappointed. Aaron, what do you got today, my man?
I've got some good ones. We've got some Hot or Nots from listeners. I'm excited
about
this.
We love that. We love that.
So Scott in Plattsburgh sent one in last week. Dak will go to Washington next year. Hot or not?
Yeah. Dak will go to Washington next year. Not. I think if Dak can play, I think what's happened this year, and I've told you guys this, I wasn't sure if Dak Prescott is the guy that you want to spend all that money on. But what I'm seeing out of Dallas right now, I think you got to pay Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is a difference maker. Now, is he going to lead that organization to a Super Bowl? I have doubts about that, but I think he's a difference maker. He can do it all. He's got the ability to throw the ball. He can get outside the pocket. So I would say not. I think he's going to come back as a Cowboy.
Yeah, I'd say not as well. I'm pretty sure. Exactly everything you just said, real. I mean, like, God, great job, Jeff. Like, if anything this year, the Cowboys' underperformance without him reinforces how much they need him, because there aren't guys that can really, you know, carry a team or handle the reins of a team like that. There's only so many of them, and he, you know, even with his faults, he's one of them.
Very true.
Yeah, so I think if Jerry Jones doesn't, if Jerry Jones doesn't sign Dak to a pretty big contract following the way this season has gone, I think that's probably a low point for him as an owner.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, you can go on him, but I guess the next question is, do you recover from compound fractures? How do you come back from that? Like, I'm just asking the question. I don't know. I mean, most people come back. I mean, are they the same player? Is it different? I mean, I don't know that. Is it like if you blow your knee out? I mean, if you come back from an injury, are you the same guy? Dak's going to have to overcome those things, I think, because that's an unbelievably terrible injury. But I like Dak Prescott, and I'd be shocked if he wasn't a Cowboy next year.
All right. Baseball is better with a universal DH. This is also from a listener. I didn't write the name down. I apologize.
That's okay. I think hot. I think what, and again, and you know me, Mr. Baseball Purist, right, Austin? I don't want the rules changed around here.
Don't change the rules, but this one's okay.
Right. I'm okay with this one only because I think it allows superstar athletes and great baseball hitters to stay in the league longer. If there was no DH, you would have never had David Ortiz. You would never had Edgar Martinez. Guys like Chili Davis, who had great careers all the way till they ended, wouldn't be able to play the game. And that's just naming three really key players. So I like that. And I think for pitchers, I'm sure they love hitting, but I think it would help the game. And I like the idea of that. Not because I think it helps the game. More importantly, I think it helps baseball players stay in the game longer.
I agree. I think, you know, let the pitchers focus on pitching. It's such a unique thing anyway. The flip side, I've heard anyone talk about really, though, is, you know, so if you're taking out keeping a DH for NL teams, is that taking some of those bit players out of the rotation all of a sudden, like the guys that would be the pinch hit guys that,
yep.
you know, are other guys getting less run too? If it's just, we got our nine hitters and those are the guys that stay in. I don't know. I think ultimately, yeah, I'm for it, but I hadn't really thought about that until now.
I think it is overall better for the product of baseball. I think it's better hitting. It allows great hitters to stay in the league a lot longer and get better contracts because they have more teams vying for them. I think it helps keep pitchers healthy.
And it's not changing the rules of the game. That's what I like. Right. You know, you can still allow your pitcher to hit. I don't want the rules changed, okay? I mean, let batters hit. Yeah, so we're not changing the rules. We're instead of saying, look, you have a choice now in the National League. Your pitcher can hit if you'd like, but you can also have a DH. I like that a lot better.
All right, so Travis from First Republic Brewery says, hot or not, with the history and pageantry of the Army-Navy game, is that the best rivalry in college football?
You know, I know my guy that I'm looking at to my right is going to say no with his Michigan Wolverines and Ohio State. But I think when you look at the history of the country, and I think, yes, I think it's one of the most iconic games, you know, in the history of anything. The problem that you've seen the last couple decades is they haven't been relevant teams. So back in the 60s and 50s, when Army Navy were two of the better teams that you would play, they were top 10 teams every year. That was an iconic game. Now you're talking about teams that struggle. Navy's played better in the last few years, and Army had a better year this year, but they're not in the national championship conversation. And right now where college football is, right, and that's why I think we need to have a bigger bowl to grab from so we have a bigger tournament, the game doesn't mean much nationally. And that's the thing that hurts, I think, college football in general, is that if your team's out of it, what's the point of watching it? So in terms of what the history is, yes, I think it is the biggest rivalry ever. I would agree with that. But it's just unfortunate the teams haven't been relevant in a long time to make it bigger than what people think it is.
Yeah, I'm going to go no. That's really no surprise as you would expect. I think the lack of competitive relevance is like kind of the thing that hurts it the most. But like it's on that short list of like the all-time classic rivalries. I mean, yes, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn, Notre Dame, USC is in there, you know, for that independent stretch. But like Army, Navy, I think the coolest thing about it is that, you know, it always had its own weekend. I think that's really cool. They always played and they owned the spotlight when they played. And perhaps that's why it remained as you know, hallowed as it is, because like everybody just kind of like set aside their attention and the time to be able to just devote to that one game.
Do both teams still run triple option with out of like wishbone and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think Navy did that. Yeah, Navy just recently. Navy almost beat Notre Dame a couple years ago doing that. So
it's really tough to win.
And
that
again,
way,
and Navy's been back in the national picture a little bit. They've been ranked and they've been back. And Army this year, I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think they might be close to being ranked, or they are ranked this season. They had a really good year and they really shut down Navy this past season. I actually watched the second half of the game last week, but. I think you would find that people would be all over this game if the teams were, like Austin said, a little bit more relevant in terms of national championship conversation. And I think that would help that game if we had a bigger pool to grab from for the playoffs. So if it was, I would love a 16-team tournament. I've debated this with you guys many times. It would give teams like that are in the 15, 16, 17 range an opportunity to compete for a national championship. And I think that's what makes the college basketball tournament so special, is that everyone's got a chance if you can get in. So that's probably another debate for another time.
I would love to see them go like West Coast, something that's still very disciplined and sort of maintains that cultural image, but is, you know, maybe going to keep them in games longer when they play tough.
And let me just say, Mike, and this is a great tweet. This is a great text in the Town Fair Tire text line. Mike Williams just said, "National rankings be damned. You will never see more fire on the field. No teams play harder than they do on that day." And I agree with you. That's why I'm intrigued by it every single year. Those kids work their butts off, and that is their national championship every year. And it's not just the guys on the field; it's the fans. And this year, you didn't have very many fans in the stands in Philadelphia, but it is a sight to see. But in terms of nationally, because all people care about are you going to win a championship or not? That's all people seem to care about. But I agree with Mike on that it's a great game and people should watch it. It's a great one.
And speaking of rankings, the Army is they're on the cusp in the coaches poll and the AP poll.
Yeah.
I think they're third from roughly 28th in the coaches poll. So that's pretty cool.
Yep, it is cool.
That was Mike Williams. I think that's my former coach. I want to apologize. I wasn't trying to besmirch the triple option. I know that's what we ran.
For the record, if it is his ex former coach, he's down doing push-ups right now. Okay, because he's embarrassed. He feels bad.
I don't have any problems with the triple option. I just think, you know, late in game. I would like to see those teams be able to be more relevant in the national picture because I think that would be good for their programs. But anyway, I apologize, Mike. I'll run some gassers. Hot or not, Jeff, come on. It wasn't the Saints' defense that got them back into the game against the Eagles. It was their offense passing more on our injury-battered defense without Darius Slay, Avante Maddox, and Rodney McLeod. That's from our friend Ken in White River.
Yeah, my second favorite Philly fan. I've gotten to really like you, Ken in White River. Listen, I agree with you. The Saints got back into the game because they threw the ball more, but what did you see out of Jalen Hurts? And you didn't see a whole lot out of Jalen Hurts in the second half. I think that there were adjustments made that took him out of what he wanted to do, and I think you're going to see more of that. Once you get a little bit of film on Jalen Hurts, I think he's going to be exposed a little bit. Listen, for Eagles fans, I get it. It's been a really difficult year, and as a Giant fan, I sit back and say, I've been there, I've done that, I get it. Jalen Hurts gave them a sense of, and maybe he'll turn out to be, like, this is just my opinion, but what I saw in the second half against New Orleans was an adjustment made that took him out of what he could do. I thought that some of the offensive play calls late in that game, Austin, I don't know if you watched the New Orleans Philly game last week.
I didn't see that game, no.
Yeah, some of the decisions that they made with in terms of the offense on the New Orleans side late when it looked like they were going to take the lead were really questionable, especially some of that fourth down play. But give Philly a bunch of credit. Their defense stood up. But I think Jalen Hurts will be exposed even more this week and have a really rough time in Arizona.
Yeah, to start that hot and go, you know, like the first half they had and then have it flip almost completely in the second half is tough. I mean, I think you also look that defense, like Ken's point about the defense might be why you see Taysom Hill, who isn't exactly known for putting air under the football.
Very true.
A lot. Threw for nearly 300 yards. So that was, I think that's what, other than the result itself, that surprised me the most. And I think Ken does have a point there.
It's the reason teams are stacking up that cornerback position with depth, because it's very scary.
But again, it's not about how the Saints came back and almost won. Yeah, I mean, I get it. The defense was they're banged up and they allowed New Orleans to throw the ball down the field. It's about what Hurts didn't do. You know, Hurts is leading the offense, didn't score any more points for the exception of late, you know, when because of more of a bad decision made and they had a short field in the fourth quarter. So my point being is I think you got to pump the brakes on Jalen Hurts. I think we put him in the, you know, Arnie was saying he put him in his one game Hall of Fame already. But if Arnie puts you in a Hall of Fame, it's not a good sign anyway. Okay, so I'm just going to put that out there. But we'll see this week. We'll see. Maybe he'll prove me wrong and you can get at me next time I'm on the air. So that's fine.
Real quick, I think this one will be quick.
Yeah.
The Patriots still have real playoff hopes this season.
Hot. I mean, listen, I know it's a long shot, but we talked about this a couple weeks ago. There's a zillion scenarios that have to fall in place for the Patriots. But all of those scenarios, they need three out of these five crazy scenarios, and we don't have time to go into them. But all of them are possible because the teams that are ahead of them have tough schedules, and it's very possible that that these teams could lose the rest of their games. If the Patriots win today, they put a lot of pressure. Tomorrow, they put a lot of pressure on these teams. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's a long shot, but you got to believe if you're a Pats fan, you got the best coach in the sideline.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm hot on this too. Hope doesn't have to be measured by the ton to be real. I mean, they don't have a lot of it, but they got it and it's real. So I'm hot.
I'm going to say not because 12-28, December 28th is looming over my head. We play the Bills.
Right. You have to. I mean, again, the Pages have to win the games, but you don't worry about that. You base it on the fact that you're going to win your games, but everything else has to fall into place.
I hope I'm just wrong. I really do.
I mean, if you don't think you can beat the Bills, that's fair enough. But at the end of the day, the worry is you're thinking I'm going to win the rest of these games, and everything else has to happen. There is a chance that everything else could happen. Could you win the rest of your games? That's a big question mark too. But you worry about the thing. If you can take care of your business, you got a shot. So we'll see how it plays out.
That's hot or not.
All right, we'll be right back. We tie a bow on this show. Thanks for dealing with the craziness of this day, guys. We appreciate you. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Guys, listen, thanks so much for your patience with us today. A lot of technical issues we have in here that really are none of our control. So, Aaron, I want to give you props for being able to get our... First of all, we got both of our interviews on, which I didn't think was going to happen today. So, good job there.
Thank you.
And Austin, who was on location doing the show, we had a couple texts on the Town Fair Tire text line that said that there was so much interference on Austin's end that was, you know, that they said was kind of annoying. But basically, we'd figured out a way to change the earbuds he was using. So, Austin, thanks for doing that. And obviously, it cleared it up. So, anytime you can't get up here to a show, it looks like we're going to be able to do this, which is really, really good
and
stuff.
Thanks to the listeners for the feedback. Apologize for mea culpa for any issues we had. But we got it rolling.
Yeah, we do this on the fly. You know what I mean? We'd see it. But, Aaron, awesome job today. Hey, before we do the goal, let's get to the Green City Garage poll question today. You could have gone to Twitter at 101.3 The Game. The question today was WEEI's Gary Tanguay this week said that Bill Belichick is not the right guy to rebuild the Pats. Is he right? Yes or no? What did the great people on Twitter say?
66% said no.
So, no, he's not the right fit?
No, he's not the right
fit. No, he's not the right
fit. So, they agree with you.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Well, I like when people agree with me. And if they don't agree, then we're going to make it look like they agree with me. So, good deal. Yeah, I don't know how you can pick against Bill Belichick. I mean, come on. I mean,
building is what he's always done.
It's unbelievable. All right, guys, listen, we got to fly here for Austin Danforth, for my guy Aaron Wells. Great job today. Next week is the day after Christmas. We're not sure if we're on next week or not. And then the week after that is the day after New Year's. We got to figure out what the bosses want us to do. But hopefully we'll be back. If it's not this week coming up, if Aaron, you'll come in. I don't know what your schedule's like for New Year's, but I'll try to come in the day after New Year's to do a show. We love you. If we don't get to see you before the end of the year, happy New Year's, happy holidays. Be safe, be happy, and trust yourself. Have a great day.